Welcome to Missing and Not Forgotten, the official podcast of the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency. I'm Sean Everett, DPAA's Media Relations Chief and your host. Thank you for joining us. In this episode, we'll begin a three-episode arc in which we talk about Marine Captain Ronald Forrester, the bombardier navigator of an A-6 intruder who went missing when his plane disappeared during a nighttime combat mission over the northern part of North Vietnam in December 1972. After decades of searching, Captain Forrester and his pilot were recovered, and he was identified and accounted for in December of 2023. We're beginning Captain Forrester's arc talking to his daughter, Karenny.
Karenny, thank you so much for coming on the podcast with us. This is going to be a great three-episode arc. We're talking about all about your dad, Captain Ron Forrester. But first, tell me a little bit about yourself and your history with the POW MIA mission.
Sure. My name is Karenny Forrester, and thanks again for the interest in sharing Dad's story. Of course, I think it's a story worth telling, but I'm glad you do too. A little bit about me. I live in Austin, Texas, and with my husband, we've got three kids between the two of us, and I've spent a lifetime in the POW MIA issue. I was 2 years old when Daddy was shot down over North Vietnam as part of Operation Linebacker 2. It resulted in a peace treaty being signed. So I lost Dad very close to the end of the war. And on my 54th birthday, his remains returned to continental U.S. here for us to be able to lay him to rest at Arlington National Cemetery. When I was growing up, you know, I didn't really know any other MIA family members. So I felt like I was kind of alone in the situation. But when I was 14, I finally went to my first POW MIA family update in the Dallas area. And that was the first time I met any other MIA families whose last name wasn't Forrester. And that was definitely a game changer for me. Over the years, I've met other family members who, you know, were in their 40s before they met another MIA family member. And I think a big learning there is MIA families definitely need other MIA families, because we're walking down a path that not many people have to walk down. We always say we're in a club that no one wants to be in, and that's the truth. But for those of us in the club, we certainly need each other. I was a member of the National League of POW MIA Families for about 35 years, served as their Texas State coordinator for 20 years, and served on the board for 12. So that definitely helped educate me a lot about not only how our government approaches the POW MIA accounting mission, but also those host countries that we work with. And most of my experience really is around the Southeast Asia conflict there, the Vietnam War. But it definitely has taught me a lot that can assist Korea War families or World War II families just in how we navigate the labyrinth that we have to go through to really try and ask the right questions to get the answers we need.
Tell you what, you're getting the call about your dad on your birthday. What a birthday present.
Well, I got the call actually December 5th, but Dad's remains came home this past October 4th. And so when I had heard, you know, we'd been putting in our dates for Arlington, and it is quite a process to go through to get a date for a funeral there. And when I was told the date was Monday, October 7th, I thought, well, then I think he should, you know, since he's got to come home a couple of days before that to be able to be laid to rest, let's target doing that on my birthday, because that felt like an answer to a lifetime of birthday wishes.
So tell me a little bit more about your father. You know, we know he went missing in Vietnam, but what do you know about him as a person?
Sure. I love to talk about him. I'll start by saying I don't have memories of my own. So I've come to know my dad through the stories of others, from family members, but also classmates and those with whom he served. And also, you know, of course, pictures and home movies and those types of things that really become very treasured items. But so Daddy, he grew up in Odessa, Texas, as did I. And he played tennis, he played football. Yeah, so he was athletic, but he was also a math nerd, which I love that. I didn't know I was much of a math nerd until I got out of college. So he was more advanced than I was identifying that about that key skill set. He's got a twin brother named Don, and Uncle Don likes to tell me how he would make fun of Daddy for carrying around a slide rule and that he was part of the slide rule club. So that kind of just kind of plays to that little math geek part of him. But he was very determined from a young age. He wanted to serve his country, and more important than that, he wanted to fly. He would recruit his twin brother and his younger brother, Larry, to be his soldiers while he played general. And there's lots of family photos of him as a child where he's definitely dressed up in his military garb, but very much also playing the toy airplanes, working on airplane models, that type of thing. So he was very determined that he would serve his country, and he definitely wanted to be in the sky. And he accomplished those goals. Now, initially, you know, when it's coming time to pick a place to go to college, his first thought was the Air Force Academy. But when he didn't get an appointment there, it was a high school counselor redirected him to find Texas A&M University. And as a proud Aggie myself, I can say that the Aggie spirit runs deep in our family. My dad's twin, he has a son that's a year younger than I am, and he went to A&M also. So we were at school there together. And in fact, he wore my dad's Aggie senior boots his senior year. And then my cousin Craig went on to serve 20 years in the Marine Corps. So literally following in dad's footsteps there. And so after the Air Force didn't think dad's eyes were quite good enough to fly, he then found the Marine Corps. And as my Marine Corps cousin likes to say, that Marines believe that you can do more with less. So if he wanted to fly, his eyes were just fine. so we get a good kick out of that one. But dad never gave up on his dreams, and was determined to make those dreams come true for himself, even if he had to take different paths than he originally had planned.
That is a great story. Take your perceived shortcomings and conquer them and do what you want as far as what you feel like doing with your life. Now, going back
absolutely
to what we were talking about before, when you did get the call that your dad had been found and finally ID'd, how did that feel?
You know, you're not the first person to ask that. And this won't be the first time that I can't really answer the question very well. It's a little bit of a blur. But that morning, it was December 5th, 23. It just so happened that my husband and my daughter were both home. And I had missed the call from my casualty officer, but then I saw a text message from him saying, give me a call as soon as you can. I have something positive to report. And I guess it's the lack of normally hearing I have something positive to report. I don't know, but the positive right. to report was a key indicator to me. And I just knew right then I knew. And so I got my daughter and my husband together with me, and we called our casualty department back on speakerphone so the casualty officer, Mike Riba, could tell us all together. Mike said to us, we got a match. And we all just kind of looked at each other while that news kind of sunk in. And yeah, my brain started fast forwarding to needing to let the family know, but also wanting to understand that some of the basics, right? If what information we were going to be given, you know, documentation on. We were told at that point in time that one of the bone fragments had been identified as his pilot as well. And now his pilot, Captain Jim Chipman, he had been previously identified through dental records. And it had been just a month before that we were with the Chipman family in Utah to lay Jim to rest. And after laying Jim to rest, I had kind of resolved that within myself that we might not find out about dad. but that at least we'd accomplished something by getting Jim home. And, you know, the DNA, we were still waiting on DNA from the 12 bone fragments that had been recovered. Of those 12 bone fragments, only two could be identified. One is my dad, one is Jim Chipman, and the other just could not yield a DNA sequence that could, you know, we don't have the technology at this time that would produce a DNA sequence there. So we'll tackle the commingled remains next. But for now, we're just really excited that it was a very small bone. I was able to see the remains while I was in Hawaii about a month ago. And it is true that it's the little things that matter in life, because it was a very small bone, but it was big enough to yield DNA. And being that they had to dig for that bone in a rice paddy, and with that, they also found a small piece of a credit card with Dad's name on it that was actually tracked down to the card issuing bank in our hometown of Odessa. I mean, there was no doubt to me, you know, that, okay, this is, they've identified my dad. And there were a lot of questions about the science, and I have to thank Dr. Tim McMahon and Dr. Greg Berg with DPAA for taking time and really helping this liberal arts major understand extensive science. But they were really patient in helping make sure that I felt very comfortable with the government's findings with Dad's identification.
Yeah, we've had Dr. McMahon on a previous episode of the podcast, and it's amazing how he can break down those complex DNA questions and all of the information surrounding it and make it so that, like you said, you and I, liberal arts majors, can understand.
Yes, yes, because I was eager to know, but it sure was a struggle to put it all together. And so luckily, they were willing to take the time and yeah, I think that says a lot about the kind of people we have working the mission these days, that they are committed not only to providing accurate results, but to also making sure family members understand them. Because historically, you know, decades ago, there was a lot of distrust, and this extra bedside manner, I guess, would be kind of an analogy for it. But, you know, you want somebody to be willing to take the time to really make sure that your concerns are addressed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now that your dad has been laid to rest, what's next for you?
Well, last I looked, we still have 1,574 Americans missing in action from the Vietnam War. Unless y'all have some other good news for me today, which I'm sure we willingly accept.
I wish.
No, I am very committed to the mission. As committed as I was when I was looking for my father. I don't know that I believe in closure, because losing Dad, well, that loss remains, but I do believe in answers, and I believe in the peace that answers can really provide to a family. I wasn't able to really name what it felt like while I was going through it, but the word is torment, and the torment stopped when I knew that Dad went down with that plane. But the torment is all the questions in your mind of, well, what happened next? What if he was taken prisoner? How long was he alive after the plane was shot down? What was his life like then? You know, many family members believe that there's a chance their loved one's still alive, and I'm certainly not one to tell them that that's not true, you know? And so as MIA families, there's a lot of struggle with the not knowing what happened next when you've lost your loved one in enemy territory. And I'd like that torment to stop for as many families as possible.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, Karenie, that's really all of the questions that I have for you for now, but is there anything that we didn't touch on that you'd like to share or talk about?
Let's see, if I can just randomly hit some high points off the top of my head. I should have prepared with some notes ahead of time, but I would say for any MIA families that are hearing this, that aren't actively in communication with their casualty officer, I recommend that they please do reach out so that we can bring them into the fold and make sure they understand what the accounting community is working on and how to get better visibility and see how they can potentially help in their loved one's case as well. I definitely would encourage everyone that has someone missing to make sure you've got a family reference sample on file, because the DNA science is really what's helping answer a lot of the questions. Again, all we got back of Dad was a small bone fragment, but it was enough to answer a lifetime of questions. And even if that family reference sample, if your DNA doesn't answer the question for your loved one, it could very much help answer a question for somebody else's loved one. So I would encourage that. And lastly, as I told Dad's story about how he didn't give up on pursuing his dreams, I would also just encourage our family members that even though sometimes you can feel alone and like asking yourself if the struggle's worth it, just don't give up. Don't give up on hope. Don't give up that people are still working it. And I'm a living testament that miracles can happen. So I would just encourage people to keep the faith and keep up the fight.
Yeah, keeping up that spark of hope that keeps the drive alive to bring their loved one home. That's absolutely, it's a great, great piece of advice. Well, Kearney, thank you so much for coming on the podcast with me. I greatly appreciate it. It's been awesome getting to know you over the last few months, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Well, I'm expecting that, Sean. You're stuck with me now. So any way I can help you at all, you just let me know.
Will do. Thanks, Kearney.
Thank you.
Getting to know the families of those we search for and those we successfully identify is one of the most rewarding and fulfilling parts of working at DPAA. So we appreciate family members like Kearney coming on the show to talk about their experiences. Please join us on the next episode of Missing and Not Forgotten, where we'll talk to some of the team who found Captain Forrester in a rice paddy in northern Vietnam. In the meantime, thank you for listening to Missing and Not Forgotten, the official podcast of the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency.